In 1972, Labor went to the election with a promise that they would introduce FOA legislation. They won, but couldn't get it through the Senate. But it was not a party political issue. In 1978, Senator Durack introduced it into the federal parliament again, and he said the reasons we need this and what it does, they're simple. Well, maybe not so simple, because 4 years later, it passed into law. It took 4 years to get through the system. And when you have a look at what they did in 1982, it's just incredibly admirable. It was well ahead of its time. Bear this in mind. Other Westminster systems did not have this kind of legislation. UK's only got it relatively recently. Blair brought it in. Now, our 1982 Act had explicit objects. It said that the Australian community has a right to access this information, that the purpose behind the legislation was to enhance representative democracy, encourage public participation, and to promote better informed decision making. It was hoped, these are in the objects of the Act, they're still there today, that it would increase scrutiny, discussion, comment, and review of government actions. And it said that the paperwork needs to be kept because that is a national resource. Oh, dear me. Noble sentiments. Where did it go so wrong? You know, back in the day, the Coalition, the Liberal Party, was so emphatically in favour of freedom to information of this kind that one of the leading cases, 1985 it was, wanted the documents relied upon Treasury in drawing up the budget. They wanted to see it so that they could expose government thinking and open it up to all of us. The person who commenced that suit was the then Deputy Leader of the Opposition, John Howard. Anyway, since 1978 and until now, openness and transparency in decision-making has always been understood to be a foundation, a cornerstone, if you like, of good government. And, I mean, I don't need to rave on about this. The reasons for that are obvious. In an open, liberal democracy, the more people know, the better when they're coming to select governments and when they're coming to select the parliamentarians. And part of that is why decisions have been made. Nobody could honestly argue to the contrary. And that's part of the problem. Those who seek to defeat our access to information never do so by addressing the arguments honestly. They do so by other means. They work inside the system. By the way, I'm repeatedly asked by people who are disappointed by the system, what can be done to improve the legislative framework? And they're always surprised by my answer because I say, oh, nothing. The legislative framework is fine. It was properly designed in 1982, and if it was properly applied, it would work well today. Our problem's not with the legislative framework. Our problem is with the people who on a day-to-day basis are seeking to avoid and evade compliance with that framework. The problem lies with our politicians and to some extent by politically motivated bureaucrats. The ethos of the freedom of information legislation has been destroyed. The rules are consistently, routinely broken and ignored. Paul went through some of this. I'm sorry if it's repetitive, but now you lodge an application and what you meet is obstruction. Did you know that the Information Commissioner had been created, brought in to speed up the process and to make it cheaper? It's had exactly the opposite because now the government does this. They respond by giving you reams of redacted pages. The applicant goes to the Information Commissioner, and as Paul said, it can sit there for 2 years. And once you get it out of there, if the government gets an adverse result, they've got an automatic right of appeal to the AAT and they do it. Now, at this stage, you can be involved in pretty difficult legal arguments and there's expense, but the delay is the killer. A journalist like Paul is trying to get this information out in respect of an issue which is presently demanding. Let an issue run past for 2 years, 3 years. It's no longer of interest. Yesterday, I can't talk about a current case in which I'm involved. That would be inappropriate. But I can tell you what the lawyer said to me, because I thought it was right. I told him about today's webinar, and he said, strangely enough, the Freedom of Information Act is now being used as a tool to withhold access to information. I hadn't thought of that before, but he's quite right. So just bear this in mind. You'll see this all the time in the criminal courts. False legal arguments, expense and delay. Delay is a big thing. They're all implements in the toolkit of whom? Of the unmeritorious litigant. Now, I want to talk to you about something dear to my heart. I want to identify who killed transparency, and I'm going to give you the date they killed it. We know the date, and that's why I call this paper Buried at Sea. We know that things changed on Friday, 8 November 2013. It happened at a media briefing which had been called by the then Immigration Minister, Scott Morrison. The purpose of the briefing was to address issues from the policy known as Operation Sovereign Borders. 63 human beings had been rescued from a sinking boat. Nobody knew what happened to them. We didn't even know if they were still alive, if they had been rescued. People wanted to know. Under pressure, a briefing was arranged with the press. A member of the press on that day asked a simple question: what's become of that boat of asylum seekers? The response to that question was this. The press was told no comment whatsoever would be made because it was a secret. And why was it a secret? The press was told, and by extension, this is telling all of us, it's secret because it involved, quote, on water matters. I remember that. It ran through my mind. Since when has that been an excuse for secrecy? When was that invented? It's not national security. It's not an excuse for anything. And yet you'll recall that from that day, that was a standard Stonewall response. Week in, week out, month in, month out, it went for over a year. Once the government did that and got away with it, they found it addictive. They got a taste for it. It's got an alluring quality, you know, secrecy. So there we are. 8th of November 2013, the day that transparency died. It was murdered live on television by the Abbott government. And as my paper's title suggests, it died on water. Its remains are buried at sea. I'm just going to tell you something about Paul Farrell in this context. If you do any research in this area, you'll turn up that he was one of the original people who got into the government about this, and he used the Freedom of Information legislation to do it. There's a great story written by Paul back in 2017. Apparently, he owned a shaver at that part of his life, and he tells the story about how he got stonewalled and destroyed by a series of, quite frankly, specious arguments defying transparency. Anyway, it's all been downhill since 2013. I don't want to limit what I've got to say to the FOI Act. That's one very obvious area where it's applied. But it's gone far more generally than that. I like this one, the Auditor General. You've got to remember that the Office of the Auditor General has now become probably the single most important federal accountability agency. Yeah, sure, we should have a federal ICAC. We don't. That's another matter. But what we do have is the Auditor General, who's done a sterling job. We know about Leppington Triangle, sports rorts, car park rorts because of the Auditor General. As Paul mentioned, I'm sorry, I think it was Catherine. But as was mentioned, the government's response to that has been negative. At first, they proposed cutting back the Auditor General's budget. In the end, they resolved to increase it, but in accordance with inflation. That, in effect, really means that the funding was cut. I gave evidence at the Senate inquiry about that, and I listened to the evidence from the Auditor General's office on the issue about how they need to dedicate their resources by selective processes because they do not have enough money. There's other things. They're allied to this. Remember I told you that in the objects of the Freedom of Information Act itself, it said we've got to keep the documents because they're a, quote, national resource, unquote. By underfunding the bodies which look after that national resource, I've got in my paper sort of bad joke. Maybe the government's proposing they'll give us access to those records so that we can use them as compost on our gardens. The documents are literally rotting away. And I know this actually at a personal level. I've had a son who's a PhD candidate at the ANU, a scholar seeking access to those documents now has to wait 18 months or longer to get access to them. Try and tell that to a master's student. Doctorate students are trying to get their work done in a year, in 3 years. It's just not fair. Now, it seems to me that the only people who are pursuing the Freedom of Information Act applications could be labelled as the determined and the foolhardy. I include you in that, Paul. But I'm going to talk now about Senator Rex Patrick. I don't know whether we've got any South Australians listening, but I do know this much. There's a lot of people listening to this. Anybody, any of you who know a South Australian, get them to vote for Senator Patrick at the next election. He's been doing a great job. He's a thorn in the flesh of the government, and he's been doing it by way of the Freedom of Information Act. I got in touch with him, or he got in touch with me. We found each other somehow. Not Tinder. We got in touch somehow, and so I looked at a few matters for him, and I remember the first time I rang the Australian government solicitor and said, look, I'm ringing on behalf of Senator Patrick about his FOI application, and they said, you're going to be have to be a lot more specific than that. He's been a thorn in their flesh. I rang him up and said I was going to deliver this webinar. I said, what do you think about transparency in the federal government? Do you think it's any coincidence that we shortly thereafter had an earthquake in Victoria? His was not a generally positive review. And he gave me around about 15 examples. I've just plucked two out. I liked them. There are so many more I could have used. The first one is the Hawkeye debacle. In 2018, in response to an Auditor General report, Christian Porter did something quite remarkable. As the Attorney General, he unleashed his power to suppress an Auditor General's report. It related to the purchase by the federal government of a new combat vehicle fleet called the Hawkeye. They were manufactured by the multinational arms giant Thales. What had happened was the Auditor General had investigated, made some thoroughly adverse findings. The government didn't want that to come to light, and so they suppressed it. What's more, Thales joined in. Senator Patrick wasn't taking no for an answer. He pursued it, the base level, the Information Commissioner, and then through to the AAT. Well, it turns out that the Attorney General was legally speaking wrong, and Senator Patrick, a former submariner, by the way, was legally right. But by the time those documents emerged, the issue was years old. Another case study from Senator Patrick is one to which Catherine referred. When is a cabinet not a cabinet? As you know the story, the federal government was able to put a stamp of secrecy over all the deliberations of the federal national cabinet, as it was described. It's not a cabinet at all. As you would know, Justice White in the AAT ruled that those arguments were all legally unsound and rejected it. Again, Attorney General Porter, wrong. Senator Patrick, right. It all turned out to be just an attempt to create a shroud of secrecy over something which shouldn't be secret at all. I might say on Monday I'm going to give some evidence of the Senate investigation into legislation which proposes, in effect, to overturn the effect of that judgment. I'll do what I can on behalf of all Australians who want to know about this. I'll just mention, just in passing, one of my favourites that Senator Patrick told me about is his long and still ongoing fight to get access to information about our arrangements with French authorities in creating submarines. That one's been resisted fiercely. And what's more, you might find it curious now, things weren't always anti-French. The federal government got its own team of lawyers, but also paid for a team of lawyers to represent the French government in resisting Senator Patrick's applications. Now, I want to finish what I've got to say with a really, really sour note upon which to end. Gee, I'd hate you to leave this webinar in a positive frame of mind. I just want to remind you about this. While we are here, think about what's going on to Bernard Collieri. The cases involving Witness K and Witness J have come and gone, but think about what that involved. I was a child during the Cold War. I was taught by the nuns about the evils of totalitarian regimes. They hated those atheistic, communistic Ruskies. But I heard the stories, and I can tell you I was deeply fascinated, as schoolboys are, just at the cruelty of those people and the idea that they could think it appropriate to conduct secret trials, pitting the resources of the state against an individual, deliberately concealing from the individual being charged the evidence, the allegations, and keeping secret from the public the deliberations and even the result. Civilised countries don't do that. Well, that's going on in Canberra as we speak. I'm not blaming the lawyers or the judges involved. They're quite literally required to follow the letter of the law. I don't even blame the law generally, because the common law would have protected against this and prevented it from occurring. I blame the legislators who overrode the common law protections that we all inherited and have allowed this to occur. And I really blame those centrally involved in this prosecution. The indictment was presented in the direction of the former Attorney General Christian Porter, a man whose judgment has been questioned from time to time. Quite frankly, they should all be ashamed. You know, sometimes good things come from bad things. I just wonder whether we can't turn this around and look at Bernard Collieri, Witness K, Witness J, and start asking ourselves larger questions about what happened to our country, that we ever allowed this to occur. Let's make sure it never happens again. Thank you.